We're going to have two projects today, first Mead Garden and second budget, is that, second is underground, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so how do we want to?
We're going to start with Jeffrey there.
So we're going to start with the Mead Garden, and do we have a clock?
Welcome to the table.
Yeah, let's sit down here with us. Is there a clock that tells us about how long?
I'm going to go 45 minutes, and I can watch this clock.
Okay. Okay, Linda.
Well, good afternoon, and I'll do just a quick introduction. We absolutely appreciate the opportunity to meet with you all today, and we especially appreciate the interest that you have shown in Mead Garden in the past, and will continue, we hope, in the future. But very quickly, what we plan to do today is we plan to review what's been accomplished with the money that you've invested over the past 5 years. We'll look at the improvements that have been made, the programming that's taking place, the funds that have been raised, and the tremendous number of people that are involved with the garden. We'll also discuss what will be done with the future investment you plan to make in the garden, what your commitment means in terms of the quality of life for the citizens of Winter Park, as well as the incredible potential that exists for economic impact. Our chairman, Jeffrey Blydenburg, and I have asked Linda Keene, one of our longtime board members, to lead the presentation today. And before she starts, I'd like to introduce just a couple of people from Mead Garden who are with us today. Heather Caldwell is here. She's our assistant director. And we have Forrest Michael, who has been with us for quite some time. John Holland, who you know, is also a board member. And longtime advisor, Cynthia Wood. And I'm sure we have a few others who are on their way. But they are excited about the future of the garden, and like you, they know what a magnificent place Mead Garden is and can be with your continued investment. So with that, Linda?
Cynthia, would you mind telling everybody who you are?
All right. I'm Cynthia Hasnaugh, and I'm the executive director over at Mead Garden.
Thank you.
If we could have the lights down, please.
Okay.
Well, as you know, most of you know, I'm Linda Keene, and I'm a Winter Park resident, and for the 13 years ago, I became a member of the board of directors of Mead Botanical Garden. And I thank you for taking this time. It's hard to carve out time, for sure. As you're all aware, Mead Garden is composed of 47 acres of land that was originally deeded to the city in 1936. Five individuals to be operated as.
1 second, there's
some noise, it sounds like.
Rage back.
With that, yeah, music.
There.
All right, okay. It's off now.
That was my music.
It's how pretty. Okay.
It's to be operated as a botanical garden. And after receiving our 501c3, our board of 16 volunteers have stewarded the garden, operated Mead under a lease from the city since 2012 as a public-private partnership. And indeed, this is a city-owned asset, one of the best. Mead Botanical Garden is well positioned to enhance and promote the four adopted pillars of Vision Winter Park. Pillar number one, cherish the quality of life by promoting a place for nature with active, walkable, safe, and lighted areas, clean air and water, and an enhanced, healthy lifestyle. Pillar number two, define a sustainable future for the garden using collaboration and master planning. Pillar number three, integrate arts and culture into the garden. Pillar number four, building, enhancing, embracing our 76-year-old institution, Mead Botanical Garden, for the lifelong learning about nature and the value of the world that we live in. All these pillars can and will be achieved at Mead Garden. Over the years, the board has spent considerable time learning what makes up these 47 acres, the ecosystems, wildlife and habitat, the plants growing here, and some of those plants are here dating back to the opening of 1940, infrastructure needs, and a clear picture of our diverse users. Looking to other successful gardens around the country and the world, we have searched for the best ideas in function and design that would apply to me. We've identified experts in garden design, as well as best practices and programming. What could Mead look like 20 years from now? We do not know at this point. But it is not up to us alone to make that decision. It will be in partnership with you and the Gwynn Park City Commission and the community. The ultimate plan must be comprehensive and sustainable and will include features and programs corresponding to the needs and interests of our community. The plan must also include best practices for the conservation of natural resources, as well as venues for education, arts, and culture. Mead is a natural botanical garden, not an ornamental botanic garden, such as Lou Garden. This establishes Mead's distinction in the 21st century as a natural botanic garden, putting us in the forefront of the current trends in gardens around the country. Our future plans may involve revenue areas that can help offset some of the financial needs of the garden, and certainly will include showpiece, horticultural areas, a visitor center to welcome and guide guests, a convenient parking, safe ADA compatible lighted access paths and accessways, designated areas for learning about nature, earth, and water resources, areas for culture and arts performances, areas for quiet and solitude, areas for community gatherings and weddings, and most of all, beauty. We have learned that the botanic gardens can generate enormous economic benefit for their communities. We have been regularly consulting with Coastal Maine Botanic Garden. It is a natural botanic garden, similar to Mead in its basic operating size, and it has been open only 15 years. It was constructed 3 miles out of the city of Booth Bay Harbor. And as you can see from this chart, the attendance was zero in 2006. In 2016, it had an attendance of 155,000. And an annual community economic impact of over $39.5 million. To orient our minds as to what the possibilities for future may be, let's look at some of the other gardens we have been researching. And these are a variety of gardens. Some of them are water features, some of them are showpieces. And I think it takes looking at these to get the ideas of what we're talking about. Because sometimes we don't think this expansively. And certainly the variety is endless. Today, Mead is a magnet for activity and exploration, as well as solitude and serenity, drawing an estimated 47,000 visitors annually. It is a living botanical museum, a vibrant classroom, an ecological learning lab, and a place for people of all ages to see plant collections and experience the natural world, as well as a special place for memorable occasions, concerts, and cultural events. And, of course, our number one visitors are birds. Mead Garden can be a primary visitor destination and a spectacular asset for the city of Gwynn Park. During the years of our involvement in Mead, the city has contributed approximately $760,000. We have leveraged our 501c3 charitable status to generate about $3.2 million in donations and grants, plus receiving over 66,000 volunteer hours. That's a staggering amount of community involvement. This is the major strength and advantage of our public-private partnership. With what the city has made possible and with the city's investment of operating and capital allocations for the past 5 years, and our financial resources and manpower commitment, we have transformed the garden with these significant capital projects. We remodeled the Tractor Barn, creating our learning center. We remodeled and decked the environmental house. Dredged Alice's Pond, restoring its natural habitat. Removed invasive species, created access paths, replanted the old city clay pit, making an environmental stormwater learning center. Rebuilt the dilapidated greenhouse, creating the legacy garden and expanding the historic camellia garden, planting over 400 camellia bushes. Restored the historic pole barn, now being used as a classroom and for rentals. And it comes down to people, and there are many stories. Ian is a military veteran and a photographer, and we have scores of photographers at the garden who come to the garden, who came to the garden looking for a quiet outdoors place to teach Tai Chi to other veterans. And then there's Bill and Joe, who are recent retirees, who individually came to the garden every day for a walk. These three men did not know each other, but they've become good friends, meeting daily in the garden, sitting in the pole barn, solving the problems of the world, and they've also become ambassadors for the garden. They greet people and they point out specific, special spots that newcomers might miss. Continuing the list of improvements we have completed or are contemplating, we funded and built a magnificent outdoor performance stage, the Grove, used for events like Valentine's Day with the Buzzcats and the Florida Symphony Youth Orchestra, refurbishing and redesigning the Little Amphitheater, home to many memorable events. We're designing and preparing to enhance the front entrance of the garden. We completed the southern section of the Nature Boardwalk over a newly cleared wetlands in Lake Lillian, created open water areas and replanted habitat, made possible with a $400,000 grant from Florida Department of Environmental Protection and a $50,000 grant from the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. We replanted natural habitat as well as purchased and planted dozens of trees on the property. We established and expanded the butterfly garden. We established the city's first community garden. We constructed a trailhead and walkable paths and trails. With these capital projects in place, we've been able to offer effective and exciting programming, utilizing our extraordinary volunteer service with over 66,000 hours of volunteer commitment. We created and expanded our summer youth camp program, with over 360 campers in 2016. This year, we had an incredibly long wait list of over 100. I must tell you now about one of our special campers. Sarah came to us as a camper in 2012. Her mother was reluctant to register her because of her condition. She had a mild form of autism that impacted her social and communication skills. She rarely spoke, was difficult to understand, and could be overwhelmed in unfamiliar situations. Our camp director, Stephanie, encouraged her mother to give me to try. The first day was rough, some meltdowns during hikes. Stephanie and the staff got through it, and with each day, got better and better. By the end of the first week, Sarah had such a great experience that her mother asked if she could come back the following week, and the week after that, and the week after that. Since that summer of 2012, Sarah has been back nearly every week. This year, Sarah, who's now 14 years old, has become part of the CIT volunteer camp staff. We have also hosted major family-centered events like Duck Derby, Backyard Biodiversity Day, and the community-wide Grovember plant sale. We've offered field trips and programs for schools and civic groups, such as Scouts. We've created several ongoing education programs and our new Tai Kites for families. We have completed all these activities through collaboration and partnerships with many affiliated groups. The Winter Park Garden Club, Orange Audubon, Florida Native Plant Society, Camellia Society, Valencia and Rollins College, Full Sail University, Florida Symphony Youth Orchestra, and the Winter Park High School Band. As to the future, how we enhance and develop this new Mead Garden and empower the economic driver that it has the potential to become, we must determine. We propose a new master plan be prepared by a garden design expert through funding from our organization, with significant input from the city and community that addresses these components as to the future of Mead Garden, with the needs addressed as follows: security and signage, lighting, ADA trails and paths, convenient parking, a visitor center, places for education, arts and cultural performances, horticultural showpiece, gardens, sculpture and water features, quiet and solitude. What will all this cost? At this early stage, we estimate it may cost approximately $10 million in capital funding to bring Mead up to its potential and our shared vision. It will also involve an operating budget to run the garden once it's completed. The required budget will depend on what makes up the garden and related programming as determined by the master plan. As a point of reference right here, let's take a look at a neighboring garden you're all familiar with, Blue Garden, a City of Orlando asset. The annual operating cost for Lou is $2.5 million. Of this, $900,000 is received from on-site revenue and grants, and the City of Orlando provides $1.5 million annually. While we will not look anything like Lou, Mead in the future will require a larger operating budget. We can and will use our 501c3 status to help leverage the needed investments in Mead. However, we must have the city's help to achieve these goals. We will not only need to complete a sophisticated and detailed business plan, as well as a new master plan, but we will also need staff to provide the strategy and collateral materials to secure the major donations leading up to the capital campaign. It will be essential to carefully layer grant opportunities and the timing of those awards. Funding from the City of Winter Park will be essential in our ability to attract matching grants. For example, the Florida Cultural Facilities Grant, which has funded many organizations around the state, Naples Botanical Garden, Bock Tower Garden, the Jacksonville Zoo. Their main requirement for receiving one of their grants is that matching funds must be in the bank before you can apply for the grant. It will also be imperative to choose a fundraising window in our community to minimize competition from other organizations that are raising funds at that same time. In 5 to 7 years after securing major seed gifts, we will be in a position to successfully launch a capital campaign to help with the development of the garden. We will be leveraging private investments and philanthropy and use the benefits of our nonprofit status. With all that said, we stand at a very important and pivotal point in the garden's history. The residents of Winter Park need city's continued participation and support for this city-owned asset. Today, we ask that the $100,000 capital allocation be included in your 2016-17 fiscal year budget, which will be used to make improvements that will enhance this wonderful asset. In addition, we ask for a commitment to fund Mead Botanical Garden for the next 5 years. We're excited to go forward with you enhancing the garden, a very special natural place situated in the heart of Winter Park. And Mead Botanical Garden is a place where all the major pillars of Vision Winter Park can come to life. We at Mead Botanical Garden, Inc. offer our caring stewardship, our charitable status for leveraging investment, and our knowledge base for this endeavor. I thank you for your attention, and we stand ready to answer questions or concerns.
Thank you, Linda. Do we have questions to ask of the Mead Garden Group? I have one, and then we'll just kind of, what's the time frame here? Are we talking about 10 years it's going to take to achieve this goal, if that, or what is the time frame?
We have to raise the money for the master plan. You have to be careful to start that master plan 18 months out on the front end of your capital campaign. Your capital campaign should start within that period to build on what you're doing during the master plan. You have approximately 12 to 14 months to complete your capital campaign, or you won't get there. You have one shot at that capital campaign. If you mess up, you're not going to get another shot. So you have to align all your lead gifts, probably 80 to 90% of them, before you enter that capital campaign for the Everyman, which puts you to the top of your fundraising goal.
So are we talking 8 years, 10 years? What to achieve what we saw there and what you were saying? Is it how
10 to 15 years?
10 to 15 years, yes. Okay. That was my question. All right.
And these things are slow. And these things should be slow because you figure them out as you go along.
Okay. Who wants to start with questions? Greg, you're over here next?
I'm thinking.
You're thinking? Carolyn, Peter, who wants to start?
Actually, not having anything prior to the meeting, mm-hmm. I'd like to think about this a bit. I'd like to see what you're mm-hmm. going to give us when you go home. This presentation is very, very similar to the presentation that we had X number of years ago when we put in place a plan that said we will fund this year, at 5 years, and how we were going to work through that. What I would love to see is that plan and an understanding of where we went from there, how we, what we were able to accomplish, but maybe didn't go exactly like we hoped, what we accomplished during that period against the master plan. And then the question is, what is wrong with the master plan that was presented to us 5, 6 years ago, whatever that was, and how does that master plan differ from the master plan we're talking about now? So for me, I that's what I was hoping I would mm-hmm. see before I got here, because for me, I don't like to get information out of meeting and then hope to make a decision. I really mm-hmm. like to have a little bit of time to look at it and understand how it compares, because if we changed voices, this is kind of the presentation we got however many years ago when we set up a plan to fund for 5 years. I'm really not critical. I understand. Sometimes things don't go like they're planned. Sometimes things are better than they're planned. Sometimes that was just the start. I think back in those days, you were very honest that number was like $10 million. I don't think that $10 million is a shocking number to anyone here, because I think we talked about that years ago. So for me, I sort of, it's all about priorities, and it's about understanding what the final goal is. And I'm still not quite sure I understand. And I was going to ask you that, what is the difference in an ornamental botanical garden versus a natural? That helped me some to understand we're pursuing a natural botanical garden and how that differs from ornamental, not only in the way of what I see, but in the way of what it costs to do it and maintain it. That would be helpful to me, just to understand. So I just need to kind of...
Can you clarify that, the difference between?
Number one, the things you saw here are what we've done in 5 years.
Oh,
that's what we've done. And 5 years ago, we have been learning fast and furiously. And 5 years ago, we were not in the same place thinking about that garden that we are today.
That is a huge, huge business, running a botanical garden. And there is, it's a detailed business. It's a complex business. And it has taken us a long time to get on top of it. And in terms of master plan, master plans have evolved. And that master plan that was done back in 2007 was not done by a garden design expert. And we really didn't have conditions that we wanted met from them like we would today. We understand a whole lot more. And that ended up with a master plan that wasn't as usable. And those conditions are exactly what I set out. Your lighted pathways, your safety and security, your ADA paths and accessways, which we don't have, your parking, your other areas for programming. Those we really understand what our users are and what they need now. We have a vast, vast, expansive amount of different users. And some of them conflict a little bit. So you've got to balance this one to this one so they all fit in there together. Because it's a big garden and there are a lot of people that come over there.
I could add to that, ornamental versus more the natural, which, as Linda had said, is really a trend that garden directors are moving much more toward. We know so much more now than we did 10 years ago about water resource conservation, about the types of plants that we can plant that will attract important pollinators, not just butterflies, but other pollinators. We know much, much more about the use of chemicals and what the impact it is, not only to the earth, but to the water in which it flows. So these are all things that we actually have in our favor that more hasn't been done to the garden over the years, because otherwise we'd be having to backtrack on a lot of gardens that are ornamental display. I mean, certainly we are looking to have some display and demonstration gardens, but always with the mind toward what's the impact to the earth, how can we teach people about that as we're moving forward. But you have to have color to attract people as well. So that's just a little taste of what's the difference between natural and ornamental.
And a natural botanical garden doesn't mean you didn't specifically plant it that way. That's exactly what you'll do, but it will look natural. An ornamental garden is you put groups of species together that look beautiful, that lend themselves to the next garden, and obviously the operating cost for that kind of a garden is much higher because you're spending a lot of labor time and product time putting in those plants and making sure they live until you don't want them anymore.
So is the $10 million number tied to natural for the table?
Because we felt after we've looked at that garden this long, we are not a Lou garden. We're not in competition with Lou garden, even as that. We don't want to be. We're something different, and actually, we're very special. That's it. That's really important.
And Greg has a question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just to try to understand the fiscal impacts that you're talking about a little bit better. You're asking for $100,000 per year, and we're already giving some, right? So
this is $100,000 capital.
Right. Yeah. Given 85 operating. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which I think originally we talked about not giving operating funds at all after a certain period of time.
Right, the original agreement.
Yes, sir. I still don't have that original agreement down.
Well, right. The commission committed to $200,000 a year for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then half of that was going towards operating, half of it was capital. And then the garden started taking revenues from the weddings and that type of thing. 100 on operating dropped to 85 because there's approximately 15,000 a year in rental fees that we thought we'd be getting. So, the 5 years ended in 2015. They came in with their next 5-year request, is what you're considering now. And we have 85 currently in the budget, which will be here tonight for operating.
And do we know what the city is investing in? So,
I mean, I know that we have two people out there pretty much full-time, John, that, that do the maintenance and
Troy's group, are they?
Well, we do, I mean, we do think, I mean, you know, forestry has to go out there and build the trees, they do, yeah, if we're doing the driveway repairs, that type of thing, it's kind of a public works, but we don't budget that in a Mead Garden category.
And there has obviously been shared expenses along the way, not only your investment of capital and the labor, certainly. We appreciate so much John's team and Troy's, and it's a fantastic partnership, I believe. But there's certainly money that we continue to put in, like the trees that I work with Drew. However, we do pay for those trees. So there's examples like that. The shell stone that was put in, that was a project that we funded. And it needs to be maintained. And sometimes we bring in truckloads of shell stone, and sometimes you all might do that. And I think that that's a good balance. It is a city property. And we love the public-private partnership because it does allow us to tap into items. And I'm going to brag. Linda is chairing our upcoming Clyde Butcher fundraising event, September 22nd. I hope y'all make time to be out there if you can. As of this morning, I'm looking at Heather to make sure I'm not fibbing, but we're over $111,000 in funds raised for that evening. And so, yeah, so we're excited about those opportunities. It's taken a bit for us to really get our sea legs in getting the message out. And I think, you know, frankly, you ask, what would we wish we could do better? I certainly wish we were stronger at our communications skills. You all have a fabulous department that does that. Right now, it's Heather and myself, and we have a little bit of administrative help. Where we're well-staffed, certainly, is our summer camp, which is now producing well over 22,000 in net each year. If we had greater, more expansive facilities that are air-conditioned and you know, the barn needs to be re-roofed, we believe that we could accommodate those extra 100 kids that are on the waiting list. It's a great position to be in. And that's also while another nature camp is operating just up the street, and they also bring their 40, 50 kids a week down. I love that. I love seeing people in the garden. So there's room for more programming and more more going on in the garden. I don't want to derail.
Let me ask the second part of that question, because you talk about this overall $10 million budget in 15 years. Let's just take the 10 years, so it's $1 million per year in this budget to do improvements. But what's the burden you're expecting to place on the city for that $1 million per year? Is that
no, that's a $10 million capital fund that's going to put in all of your improvements to bring you up to snuff to be a really...
Is that money raised by y'all, or is that money... What's the city...
We are partnership.
You talked about matching funds. Like you have to have a certain amount of matching funds. Mm-hmm. Is the city going to be able to provide some of those matching funds? Is that this $100,000 per year? Or is there another number that's coming up that's going to be much bigger that you're going to be looking at the city?
There will be other numbers as we go through. We have to plan this out. And we have to know that we are going to get pockets of money at different places. And we have to know what our requirement is going to be. And as I told you, the floor
yeah. Just give an example then. So let's say you guys have a certain building you want to build, and you know it's going to be $2 million, and you want to start to go get a grant. So what you would look for is the city to pay half that, put $1 million into a fund, because you said you have to have the money in the fund already, and then you would go apply for the grant to get the other $1 million.
Yes.
Well, we would love for you all to put the million, but we also are obligated to look for additional charitable contributions in addition.
City, charitable
it could be.
It could be that, yeah. We all have to hold hands with this, and that's how you get there. The Florida Cultural Facilities Grant is a wonderful, wonderful vehicle, and it's a way of bringing substantial funds in. But it is very onerous in how we have to adhere to what they want.
So then the initial master plan that you're talking about to be developed, do you have any kind of estimate of the cost of that initial master plan?
About 150.
And is that something that's going to be?
That's our nickel.
So that, is that something you're getting ready to start on? And then with regards to you guys doing that, what are you looking for from us to get that going? Because it sounds like specifically from us. Do you need something for that?
I need you to participate with us because we need your voice in this master plan.
But not funds. Yeah, what does it mean? What does it mean to need our voice?
It would be bringing together both members of the city staff as well as commission to go through and determine really the big question at the end of the day is operating a botanical garden with a staff of 20, 10 years from now, that will have an operating cost of probably, as you saw in the garden, $2.5 million a year, which will have an economic impact of $30 to $40 million a year if you use Maine as an example. So it's a big leap for the city because it's moving
you're
into
for a commitment.
Yeah,
but as you're going there, it's
forward.
You're right, Grant.
Yeah. It will be phased in.
Right. So this first step is to spend this $150,000. Is any of that coming from the city?
No.
Additional funding that we're talking about.
No.
That's something that y'all are planning on going ahead and do. You just want us to be on board that we're going to work towards this because what I hear over and over from Randy is I cannot commit future commissions to any money. So I totally understand that. So as I can tell you guys, this is great and we're on board with it. But I don't know what we can do with regards to, you know, it seems to have a positive attitude about moving forward. So, you know, to me, I just want to understand what we're being asked to do.
Well,
great.
Just to clarify that statement, though, too, and I apologize for being here late. I got caught on the phone. You're not committing any, just because we approve a plan that they present to us, that's approved by this commission, it's not committing anybody down the road. If another commission down the road sees that they need to do something else with those dollars, they're not committed to it. And I apologize, Linda, Cynthia, Jeffrey, again, for my being late.
You aren't the only one who's late. You're just a little later than the rest of
us. You came from New Jersey, I came from about a quarter mile down the road.
Planes are a lot quicker than traffic.
Let me chime in a couple of sentences here before we finish up based on I will say a couple things that I talked about this morning with Cynthia and Jeffrey, and that was first of all, the organization Mead Garden Inc. deserves a lot of credit for having done things that are very positive with the money that was given to you in the past. The second thing that I want to note is that you originally, I think earlier this year, asked the city manager, your request was for the city to fund the $150,000 projected cost to do a complete master plan for the long haul. I just want to compliment you on backtracking on that and realizing that that's the organization's responsibility. I think that's a good step forward. Obviously, I believe the commission generally has already committed. We'll find out later this afternoon, but there wasn't any. There has been no talk about not granting Mead Gardens Inc. the $85,000 that the city manager recommended. So, you know, we are pleased, I think, as a group, to support the organization at least at that level. And I'll talk more this afternoon when we get to the budget about your capital request and some of the conversations we had this morning. You know, my interest is in understanding exactly what you want to do with that money, not just a general capital budget. For example, quickly, the barn building. I'd like to have the city building staff look at that building from the standpoint of, you know, is it economic to spend X dollars doing what you want to do with it, given the status of the building, the type of building it is? What would the estimated cost of running the building be once it's HVAC loaded up? And, you know, where does that money come from, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm very interested in finding ways to support the organization going forward, but I'm very interested in the details of what we're going to accomplish as we approve things. I would think kind of step by step in my sense. Just those are my public comments.
Sarah, have you been running this the whole time, so please feel back and jump in now?
No, jump in, but the only other thing that I would say is in looking at something that's going to have eventually a $10 million price tag, that you're looking at probably taking the brunt of raising those funds with what you're talking about doing, and you have to go in a step-by-step process, I would like to see what that looks like for year 1, 2, 3, all the way out. Because one of the things that I want us to have is a long-term plan. Now, if another commission comes in behind us and says, we don't want that plan, just look at New York Avenue. Just the other day, some of us said, let's don't redo New York Avenue right now, and yet that's already been a plan that was approved by a previous commission. So we're very accustomed to approving that. I like a long-term plan. I want to see what it's going to become. I love the idea when you showed up there a picture of how big the garden is, and seeing how much space that represents right there at the corner of Orlando and where you come into this community. So I like the idea of where our parks are located and what we can do with that parkland that could even be more than what we've done in the past. And I'd like to be a part of that, like you're talking about. So I don't know how all that would work with the master plan process, but I'd like to see that, because that's the legacy we all leave, is the green spaces for our children's children. And I think all of us have a vested interest in that. So I certainly support that. But I'd like to see what it's going to look like from year to year as we move it out. Because you have to have a, you know what they say, if you don't have a map and don't know where you're going, you sure won't get there. And so I think that that's what we're all looking for. And we're looking to you for that map.
Yes. And that's the master plan.
The schedule you're referring to will be part of the master plan process.
Yeah.
So it's a roughly a 9-month process to go through that, but that one of the deliverables will be a year-by-year phase of what's happening.
And
the fundraising and the implementation and all those pieces. You will have a clear picture roughly 9 to 12 months from now of exactly what that is.
And the other thing you did is you just gave us these four pillars that we've seen on paper, and that's what I want to see. I want those pillars for our vision to come alive in our community, and that's what I want to measure my effectiveness and all of our effectiveness on, is how that vision statement that we just approved and made, how does that actually look in reality? And you did that with the pillars. So thank
you. This does not preclude that we wouldn't phase this project either. If that's the decisions you make after you have a master plan that you say you want in front of you, and then you decide how you can get there.
Okay, if there's nothing else, I think we have a secondary session coming up. So thank you.
Thank you,
guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I thought you guys were going to show up with big rolls of cable and transformers.
Randy, was the work session opened up as a dual work session? So we need to reintroduce the electric.
We said both things.
Thank you. Let's turn it over to Troy.
Excellent. So about 3 months ago, we met with you. We talked about revising the existing undergrounding plan, some reasons why we wanted to do that, to be more efficient, more timely, make the best use of our dollars. And we wanted to provide larger scale projects where we could loop all of our feeds, instead of having one-way feeds that are underground, they need to be in a loop. Because if something goes out, you've got to have a back way to feed it. Otherwise, people can be out of power for a while, because it takes a while to fix underground. Yes. Correct. And so
that's a good boy.
With some of the work that's been done in the past and the way it's designed, and the old project being very segmented, you know, we're doing a little piece here, and then we're doing a little piece here, and doing a little piece here. We weren't providing that looping in most places.
Was that intentional?
Was it unintended? It was unintended, no.
Okay.
Also, every time we would have overhead and we would go underground, and then we would go back overhead because we did that little section right there. We're paying money for this effort to go from overhead to underground, and this right here, which we felt was really a waste of time and money. The other thing that segmented approach yielded was areas where we have underground areas feeding overhead areas downstream. Dan's going to give you a one-minute dissertation on why we don't want that.
Well, I think I get it, but go ahead.
Right. Well, when another thing with all the extra efforts going up and down, there's also those fused cabinets that you see that are only necessary because you're going from overhead to underground, whereas moving forward, they would be a transformer or a switchgear that's whatever's appropriate for that design in that area. But when you're stopping here, you have to put something that goes from overhead to underground. So you see those extra green caps you don't need. And what happens is when you, overhead's meant, a fuse is called a K-fuse. It's not to get too technical. It's meant to trip in a sine wave, a time and distance fault current setting that's slow for overhead.
Not
in other words,
technical.
Well, yeah, sorry. But anyway, it's meant
to, I try.
So, anyway. So if a branch falls on overhead, it'll burn for a little bit before it blows the fuse and knocks people out.
However, on underground, it's meant to blow quickly so as not to destroy the underground wires. Well, we're putting fuse coordination in such that I've got a fuse that feeds an overhead line. When a branch falls in that line, and it should just trip that one fuse that we have overhead, it's going beyond that fuse all the way down the line to the underground fuse because it seizes much quicker. Mm-hmm. And so I'm having twice the amount of customers out that I need to have for that fault.
Okay. So that's one of the reasons why we wanted to look at bigger projects and take in and eliminating this underground feeding overhead situation.
So I just have to make this comment. So what you're telling us is that after getting into this, we've figured out that there's some things that we need to change.
Yes. Sure.
And so that's why you're here. And that's just what we heard from Mead Garden. Yeah. They got into it for 5 years and got it.
So we came up with a new revised project plan area. I sent that out on Thursday. I don't know if you're really able to take a look at it. There's a paper copy here. There's an electronic copy up there, which is very difficult to read. But we basically took geographic areas. We looked at the existing distribution system. We looked at switching. So you've got these feeders that are going through the city. You've got switches that come off of those feeders. We want to take everything downstream of the switch and make that underground, and then move on to the next switch, and then move on to the next switch. And so we came up with 26 different projects that are more in a geographic area. These projects allow us to provide looped feeds because they're larger, and we'll pick, instead of just doing one street, we'll pick up a whole neighborhood, and we'll be able to loop through those streets. We'll also mostly eliminate the underground feeding overhead. We'll also be looking at the existing undergrounding that's within any of those geographic areas. We'll be assessing that existing underground. Some of it was put in the 70s and 80s. Some of it was put in the 2000s. And so, you know, if it's direct bury, if we're having problems with it, it will be a part of and engineered into the entire undergrounding plan.
So back to your previous point, you'll prioritize those down to up downs. You'll prioritize that skipped underground section.
Yeah, so you're saying that was previously done?
Yes.
Yeah, and not to get off task, but if you look, we highlighted blue what's been done already.
Yeah.
You can see how disconjointed that is, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So yes, when we get into this project, we're going to have to turn those back into a loop configuration. So those are all what we call radials now.
Okay.
They'll have to be, so those people, unfortunately, we'll have to address those people again because...
Like my
well, the blue as well. Yes, ma'am. So where the yellow and blue intersect, we'll have to get back into those pieces of equipment and kill the power to do that because you can't work in some of those things while the power is energized.
But some of the neighborhoods were undergrounded back when they were built, and right. Progress Energy at that time wasn't putting in conduit; they were putting in direct buried wire.
They still
and,
don't.
And so, you know, we'll want to reassess that, like in Randy's neighborhood.
So. But we don't want them to go in front of the places, okay, do we, that have been waiting for a longer time to go under.
Well,
there are some areas where we're having as much problem with existing old underground as the new. And so when we get into a project area, and I'll talk about our priority, when we get into a project area, we're assessing everything in that project area, overhead and existing underground. If he feels like the existing underground is not something that's long-term viable, we're going to go ahead and replace it.
So it's not that much.
Okay. Yeah. I don't want to be doing it twice.
No, ma'am.
Before some people get there first.
Yes.
No. Let me just try to understand the pre-existing. You know, I don't know, for the past 15 years, if you redo 50% of your house or you build a new house, you have to underground your drop.
Right.
Right. Are you talking about reassessing those?
Well, that's not now.
Okay. We're not talking about drops. That's another subject. It gets very confusing.
Yeah.
So we will bring that up.
Yeah, but it's also in terms of the issue of how much has been done. I was, you know, maybe the number's wrong, but I recall being told at one point that given all the rehab houses in Winter Park and that's something like 50% of the houses have a local drop underground.
And it's actually confusing. It's very confusing for everybody. To be honest with you, one of the things I'm doing this week is I've got our GIS guy just gave me a computer, and I'm personally driving around. I'm going to verify the system, all the data. I'm on the services because that's driving me crazy. But that's also when someone says 50% of the house service is dropped, that still doesn't mean that the wires feeding to that drop are still overhead.
So for the purpose of today, we're talking about primary, which is not the drops. On this plan that I sent you, 26 different areas, we renamed them A to Z so we don't confuse new number two to old number two or whatever.
And then you all put us in first for A, B, and C, is that right?
I'm right here. So... Four of those projects are completely done.
Okay.
So we're actually starting on Project E. Based on our operational experience and what we've got out there to do, we estimate that we're going to do between 2 and 3 projects a year. That's based on size, complexity, cost. Our goal is to get about 5 miles per year. And if you look on each of the project labels, we specify the corridors that we anticipate being in there working. And we anticipate finishing third quarter of the fiscal year 2026, which would be summer of 2026. That's a little less than 10 years from now. We feel good about that. So let's talk about priority. We used. Yes.
What was it going to be finished in the old system?
10 years.
It's been 10 years.
The estimate was 10 to 12 years, but it was really a guess at that point because we didn't have the history behind us.
So now we're making a better educated guess. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So just for your information, 2013 was the start of the plan.
Right.
It was anticipated to be about a 10-year plan at that point. We got into it. We've done about 12 of those original projects. We've gone slower and spent more money. Right now, we just finished but what was that project, 12?
It would have been 12. It's much more than 12, but yes.
Yeah. By that original plan, we should be on like project 18 or so. And so, that's just some...
All right. Well, that's what it is,
Correct. All right, so now let's talk about...
In all fairness, you guys, we're new at it. We did 2 years of it. 3 years. I always anticipated we would go back and look at how we were doing, and that's why the collection of data on how we've been doing it is, and that's what these guys are doing, the planning report, that's why we waited for them to do some, for Lindsay to tell us that we can do this, and certainly not. So I think, you know, I think the intent was always to go back and do a checkup.
Can we go back to when we did the bond? What year was that?
2005.
And what did we say then?
Which bond?
The initial.
There were two bonds. Initial purchase, when we were doing the public meeting, we said 20 to 25 years.
So right. We're still within.
Yeah. And then when we did a bond issue, I think in 2008 or 9 to 2007, was from, to do a specific amount of underground. And we did that too. And that's actually,
so we're still within our window.
The last of that bond money was running out this year.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was the heart of the system at first. Right. That was to get our main feeders underground. So that's already in the process.
Gotcha.
So when we talk about priority, there was a lot of emphasis placed on that original plan of 76 or so projects of having a priority that was not political.
It was trees,
type of wire, and
trees, wire size. There was a part of it that was the judgment of the linemen based on outages. There was rear lot, front lot, and there was single phase, two phase, three phase.
And
there's
so, one other, whether it was a main entry.
That's right.
So there was a matrix.
Pick this area geographically and do it all right at one time.
And operationally correct.
But still based on that original.
Right.
Yeah. So
the priority as to which one we go to next, you know, whatever one would have been next, that's the quarter point you jump into and do the whole project.
So that was our intent, was to keep that same. So we went to where the next project was. We looked at that area. We said, okay, let's do that. Let's make that big project the next project. And then we went to the next area on the old plan. And so what we did here, just to kind of clarify and summarize.
You're upside down.
I see that.
All depends on your perspective.
These are hand. These are hand colored areas.
North.
Okay. These are hand colored areas that represent the segmented projects in the old plan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we finished project 12, moving to project 13, which is purple. It's actually this, because when you put the purple over the tan, it kind of gave that color.
Right, where did you
so, 13 was Glen Ridge and a little piece off of there. Mm-hmm. And then 18 was this area right here.
Mm-hmm.
And so we jumped this to be the next project. It meant that this area, which is Timberlane Shores in the original plan, was further out. They're getting brought forward.
Tom used to tell us.
Yeah. So, but that's the intent of going into their area instead of just doing this. So then going to project 14, which is blue. You can see project 14 was actually this street, this street, this street, and this street.
Mm-hmm.
It actually covers, you know, basically three project areas. We looked at
give me a neighborhood.
Project 16.
There's an upside down here.
These are the tree streets.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Lake Knowles.
This is
this
Palmer right here?
The
green tree or something like that?
Yeah.
This is Palmer, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay, gotcha.
Going to project 15, which is this peak. But you can see this project 15 was actually a bunch of segments.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, you know, we made this, let's see, this project is E. F is here. This is this project. G is this project. H is this project. And so you can see how, I think, as good as we could do, and then this is the next project here, as good as we can do, we took, you know, at least these next priority project areas and laid out our bigger revised priority list. and we kind of, you know, we did this kind of all the way down the line. So with that, you know, a lot of the residents are still are going to see about the same time frame. There'll be some that speed up, and there'll be some that slow down.
Sure. The important issue for, I think, for the commission, and I imagine this hasn't changed it in the minds of any of us, is that the city's committed to the completion of this, period. And I think that's the message for as you talk about this, unless somebody wants to.
Yeah.
I think the budget, we just want to know that the budget is the other side of that, because to Commissioner Weldon's point, it's...
So at this point, we are figuring $3.5 million a year. We feel like that, based on past experience and what we're doing right now, we feel like that's a good number. Just for example, going about with our new management style and our size of project style,
right,
we've done two large projects.
Well, we finished 12 and 11, almost done, plus there's a little bit of 9 and 48.
But on our new project style, which is the bigger ones, we've done over 6 miles. We've spent less than $3 million this year.
Okay.
Now, don't, you know, that, but
you can't
we
sort of extrapolate that out to all,
yeah,
that's all residential, sure. It's a lot easier.
So we feel good about the, you know, the plan, the timing, if we can continue to get that same general funding. Now, realize, you know, these aren't engineer projects yet. We are progressing towards engineering. We're actually contemplating trying to engineer maybe all of it within the next year or two, instead of just kind of, you know, staying ahead a couple of projects ahead. That way, when we get to an edge, it'll help us understand how to treat that edge. You know, where do we need, you know, transformers or switch gears there?
How does the $3.5 million a year pan out? I was under the impression that the extra $500,000 a year over $3 million was funded by some bonds or something.
Didn't you guys ask $4 million?
Well, that was originally, yes. And then it was cut back to $3.5 million, right?
No, I understand.
Right.
And at today's rates, given no change in the consumption, are we going to be generating $3.5 million worth of money to fund this?
We believe with our savings from...
Troy's looking away.
I'm looking to less.
We believe our savings from eliminating the ENCO contract,
right,
that $500,000. We need to keep the capital at $3.5 million.
And we'll know the answer to that for sure when?
Before we do next year.
But yeah, I
have a fiscal year 18 budget.
I feel very hopeful in the fact, just with what we've done since... You asked for how much we spent so far and the miles we went. I looked at that.
Right.
And this year, just trying to be more efficient in doing it in a more managed style, 6.46 miles under $3
million. Yeah.
I don't want to be too confident and say, look, we're doing it for less until next year. Do we have a little bit more of a litmus to check that up against?
Yeah.
But hopefully the efficiency along with the money saved from ENCO.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we'll also get into some more complex areas. It won't be as easy. And when we actually get the projects engineered, the engineer will do a more detailed cost estimate using unit prices, which are, you know, contracts that we have in place now. We've got unit prices for almost everything.
Sure,
we do,
I think what over the past couple of years, and Commissioner Cooper touched on it too, though, is, you know, we just kept hearing $10 million
years. Yeah.
Right. So I think we just need to make sure that
you want to hear nine when we
do. Yeah,
nine,
exactly.
Well, and when the budget needs, we just need more regular updates, because as many calls as you guys get, we get calls and emails.
Sure.
Well, Commissioner Cooper gets it at the supermarket. She, I don't know where she shops, but she always gets it at the supermarket. So we just need more information, more up to date information as you guys move forward.
And I have two issues that have kind of fallen off the table as a result of this that I also get lots of calls about. I'm sure other people do too. One of them is in the backyard versus in the front yard, mm-hmm. and the other one is stop butchering my trees. Mm-hmm. So understand, I get it. This makes infinite wisdom from a management perspective. On the other hand, if there's a way to lighten up on the trees, it would certainly make it better for all of us. And I get it, some things you have to do, but we're rather aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we are doing to make sure that we're not so aggressive is Drew sits in on my, I call it load meeting, but my meeting every week to talk about what we've done and what we're going to do. And so now she knows, so she had spot trimming set up for Project E. She now knows, wait, we're going in and doing underground. Don't spot trim there. So that's going to save that from happening where we're not trimming and then in a month going in and doing underground.
When the lines are underground, if the trees are all formed, it's going to be pretty disappointing to most people in the community because they thought that by having us take care of the undergrounding as opposed to someone from outside of town, we would respect our trees and understand if there's...
The correlation should be that the trimming is... due to the overhead, there should be no trimming for underground. So the trimming that we're doing for the overhead won't be necessary this fast week in underground for certain. And we're going like 14 feet deep, so we're not messing with the roots. We're certainly trying.
Don't do what you don't have to do.
I agree.
So to Carolyn's point on the other issue she raised, now within these geographic boundaries, you're doing backyard and front yard at the same time.
We'll be removing backyard and moving in front. There will be no construction on the backyard moving forward.
Oh, I get it. So we're not going to go back in and put it in the backyard.
That's correct.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's a good thing to
do. Okay, so my question is, we did go to the extreme of having a system in place where you could go online and check to see when you were going under. And so that is still one of the biggest questions that we receive. So I don't know what this system, how you're going to relate it, but surely you can do the same thing.
Yes.
And you can just reprioritize that because people have been counting on something.
We can do that.
Okay.
It will be we'll update. Yeah.
You know, one of the things I did is I looked at the data, and it's something that was, you know, we went through actually three cycles on that first time until we got the final order, because we thought, you know, fairness was a big part of what you have to take a look at. And so there were a couple things when I looked at these that kind of stood out to me, and I thought we might should think about them. But, you know, one of the things that we had talked about, Tom's project, Project E, you know, this is one of the last projects in the original list, and it's now been moved up to happen quite a bit sooner. And then when you look at what's happening over here in Project V, this is an area where everybody moved back, nobody moved up. And so for me, I was kind of looking at, well, this was the one that stuck out. There's some people move up, some people move back. The way they did it, that's going to happen. But this was one that I thought we should really take a closer look at.
Which one specifically?
And then between Project E and Project V.
What neighborhood are you looking at?
I can't tell what that one is. Is that the
just
west
tell,
side?
I know. Timberline Shore. I know Timberline. What's this one?
Is that the west side?
Webster and all that.
Okay.
West side,
north
of
North.
Oh,
see, I want to see it, right?
Well, that would be good.
Let me ask you that then. Is that something that, if this ahead in the schedule?
Well, it would. You can only spend CRA funds in the CRA.
Right, but my point being, if we adjust this to, say, Project E or Project F, and then we can get funding from the CRA to help with that.
Well, here's one thing that we could do. We actually could talk with our contractor. Mm-hmm. We could tell them that if we got extra money, we have a specific project we want them to bring in extra resources for, leave our existing resources going on their same route, bring them in solely to do that project, and then when that project is done, those resources would go back to use, you know, somewhere else where their company wants them to use.
I like how you're thinking.
Outside of one
part. Correct. Yes.
So let me ask you a question. This is not a CRA meeting, so we've got to be careful about how we're addressing this. But I want to ask you, Troy, tell me, what does that take time-wise, the CRA, under doing the fix that we're talking about? You're talking about 6 months?
Less. Well, right around 6 months and about $1.3 million to do Project B.
Right.
And that includes, now when we do it, if you'll see a bunch of blue lines inside Project D, that's already done. Of course, we're going to have to go back and retile that in, because even if you see those blue lines, if you actually walk them, there's other lines going.
Can you guys do me a favor then? Would you, from a city commission standpoint, would you pull together what an expedited CRA plan would be and bring that to the CRA, maybe advisory board, and then we can look at it as a CRA board? But I really want to kind of get away from talking about that in this meeting. But I think that's something you can pull together, some kind of plan specifically.
Okay, so I have to bring this up, though, because one of the things that stuck with me the most was when we first had, when I came on the commission, we had a workshop on this, and we were told that the city, if we did many more miles of 3.5 underground, it would tear the city up, and it would cause so much disruption within the city. So I actually thought one of the reasons we did these streets piecemeal in some ways was because if you went to an area and you did the whole thing like we're doing with this loop system, you would tear it, that whole section up. So I need an explanation, just because that's what I was told before.
Okay, I'm not sure who told you that.
That was at the table when we had a special meeting on can we accelerate undergrounding, and we were told that 3.5 miles a year was just about all we could do without tearing the city up and creating a lot of issues.
Commissioner, if I may, my remembrance was similar, except that it wasn't that we were going to tear the city up. It was that was pretty much the staff, and that we had to be able to manage it at the time.
And I think I can clear it up a little bit.
I'm saying that was my interpretation.
I've said all along, I don't like the double the efforts idea, because I feel as though impact to the city would be adverse with all the blocked streets.
Yes, that was part of what we heard.
There'll be a lot of blocked streets. In no way were the segments set up to prevent that.
Okay.
But if you were to double your efforts throughout the whole thing, I believe you would do impact. I got 15 guys out there working now, so you put 30 guys blocking the streets. That was my concern.
Okay.
And then finding the appropriate resources to do that as
just
well.
Just to do that one.
That would be fun, but I'm saying to do that as a whole.
And that could actually be something. Yeah, we can do that.
Troy, we've got about 4 minutes or so. Is there anything else you need before we... I'm sorry, let me just ask Troy, do you need to present anything else? Can you take
it?
Okay, Commissioner Sandell, please.
Yeah, just the other option would be to say make this project that and slide each one back.
Starting to move people around again. But
you're just moving one back.
Everyone's
getting moved right now anyway.
If we can handle it through a CRA, but again, I'm not sure that.
Well, we could still pay for it that way. If they're able to.
Or we can swap one for one rather than one.
Ask one last question, please, Mr. Right. Weldon. Just while we're here, for the record, even though it's probably put my foot in my mouth, have you guys gotten any further along in terms of alternative ways to manage the local drops? Any other recommendations from the commission with regard to that?
What does that mean?
The service drivers.
We definitely have a thought, but I'm not.
So make them happen.
We definitely have a thought about how we would want that to happen. I don't have the time really now to go into that. I would like to do that in the next couple of months. Is come back with that effort.
Okay.
And present.
I would like to hear this.
Okay.
I would like to be on time for that work session.
Great.
So, anything else for Troy and Dan? Thank you, guys.
Great job. Thank you.
If we make this change, guys, you have to figure out how you're going to get this out, because this is a big communication change. And so because we've done so much on the other system, you have to do just as much on this system so that we're not always apologizing for changing something.
We have Clarissa Howard here.
I'm not sure if she's crying.
You guys
you got to figure this out.
She's our favorite.
But are you her favorite? Okay.
All right. Well, that's great.
You
makes sense.
You can put this out there.
We are adjourned. Thank you.